Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Leal welcoming you to the LL Research radio program, In the Now, Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert. Today is Friday, March 2nd, 2012. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. I will be asking Carla questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask Carla a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room on the webpage for In the Now at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert of LL Research. We will be here every Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern. Carla, how are you doing today?
Hey, Monica. I actually am still here. Did not get blown away by the tornadoes that came through here earlier. I'm happy to say the daffodils and I are blooming all pleasantly in the weather that always comes after such horrible extreme weather events. We got lucky. About 3 miles south of us and about a mile north of us, there were tornadoes that touched down. And there were tornadoes all around us. But we were leading a charmed life, and I'm happy to say Avalon Farm was okay, too.
Not I didn't realize they were that close to you.
They were really close. They came right through town. But we got lucky. It was kind of fun, though. I ventured down in the basement. I haven't been downstairs for a long time because you have to. It's a process, you know. You have to take the pump that I'm hooked to, you know, while I'm healing here, and go very slowly, you know, so the pump doesn't get messed up. And there had to be a special chair down there so that I could sit comfortably, and so forth and so on. It was a process, but did fine, and we were entertained by all the glorious colors of all the horrible weather. They have such dandy colors on the weather maps on TV these days that we were pretty entertained. I'm afraid it wasn't that fun for everyone. There were lives lost in the Kentucky tornadoes and Indiana as well, but we were spared, and thank God for that. So I am here and so glad to be here. We're sorry that we missed last week. It was just one of those things where we could not make it. And sorry about that, and hopefully it won't happen for a long, long time again.
Well, I get the blame for that. I had a business convention all last weekend, so I get all the blame for that one. But, yeah, you're right. It shouldn't happen very often. So very, very rare occurrence that we'll have to cancel.
Right.
But we are glad you're safe and sound. That is for sure. Well, I'm going to go ahead and do our opening riff. And this is from a quote from Ra, session 50.5. There are those whose lessons are more random due to their present inability to comprehend the nature and mechanism of the evolution of mind, body, and spirit. Of these, we may say that the process is guarded by those who never cease their watchful expectation of being of service. There is no entity without help, either through self-awareness of the unity of creation or through guardians of the self, which protect the less sophisticated mind-body-spirit from any permanent separation from unity while the lessons of your density continue.
I picked that one this week because I've been aware lately of the realizations that people write in with that maybe they don't know who they are. Maybe they don't have, you know, a handle on things as much as they thought they did. This world has a way of knocking down the cocky, and pride tends to go before a fall. And spiritually speaking, if you're really paying attention, we basically fall apart every day. It's a matter of, you know, to what degree and in what degree of outwardness. It usually doesn't show for other people, but we ourselves see it. At any rate, I think it has become one of those questions on people's minds. You know, do I really understand the unity of creation? Do I really have that knowledge in my heart? Am I really sure about that? And, you know, this particular sentence or couple of sentences is so reassuring because it says that even if we don't, and maybe especially if we don't really have a surety, a dyed-in-the-wool certainty that all is one and that we are part of the one and that we are in good shape, whoever we are and however confused we may be, we are still in the unity. We are still able to ask for help and get it. And this is such a blessing. As I said, all of us are in the situation of needing to ask for help. We need our unseen friends. We really do. And our unseen friends need us to call on them. They need us to ask them to help us. Because the law of free will does prevail. And if we don't ask them to help us, their hands are tied, and they can only just do so much. So by all means, whenever you are feeling a bit lost, whenever you are feeling a bit straying away from that wonderful surety that leaves you fearless and confident about who you are, ask for that help. Ask for those guardians of the self which protect from any permanent separation from unity. The lessons of this density will continue. And because of the fact that we're living in the very last days of third density, because of the fact that the fourth density reality is bursting upon us more and more, it's more and more obvious to us what our shortcomings might be. Thoughts are things. Our thoughts, we can feel, are things. They're important. They're real. And so we ask ourselves, am I okay? Am I where I want to be today? And if the answer is, I don't know, or I'm not sure, ask for that help. Get that help started right away. I never start a day without asking for help. I know all too well that I will need that help during the day, not just one day or 2 days, but every day. And I am so grateful for it. And I just encourage everybody to lean back into the power that you have as a citizen of eternity. You may be at a costume party. You may be wearing a mask. You may not even be able to tell who you are because you've gotten fooled by your costume. But relax. You are known and you are loved. And you are definitely one who is worthy of being helped. And those who wish to help you are well able to do so. Your higher self knows more about you than you can ever consciously know, remembering all of the incarnations, all of the memories, not just the golden ones, but the ones that were difficult. And whatever you call the agencies of spirit, whether you call them angels or just simply spirit or inner masters or whatever, you have a goodly number of those who have been attracted to you because of your seeking. and they are ever so ready to help you. So ask and then rest in that asking. Open your mind to impressions and wait for that feeling that you are not alone, that you are loved, and that you are safe. All right. Thanks for allowing me to rant a bit.
Oh, I wouldn't call it a rant.
I love to share good news. So what question do we start out with today, Monica?
Well, you know, actually, I have a bit of a question about what you just said or a comment. What you just said is very similar to what you said to me. You might not remember, but you said to me via email a few years ago, I remember asking you that very question because at that time in my life, I was feeling very alone because I had let go of the style of prayer that I had done when I was in an organized religion, mm-hmm. but I didn't know what to replace it with. And yet I knew I needed help, but I was very confused at the time. I didn't know who to ask for. And my New Age friends were all saying, well, just meditate, you know, it's all within you. And yet I did feel very alone at the time. And I remember your advice being very, very helpful and that particular quote being very helpful. And it kind of gave me permission to ask for help again. And I started just, you know, I'm not even sure if I would call it prayer. It's not the same as what I used to do, but I guess it is a form of prayer. But I remember just asking for help from whatever guardians or angels or entities of the light might be around me and for my higher self. And it really, really did help me tremendously, and I no longer felt alone. So,
well, that's great. I don't think it really matters what you call your help. I think that we have... In the law of one cosmology, we have a great deal of room. There are suggestions as to the type of entities that are there to help us. But there's no insistence that we call them this or we call them that. I can remember when my mother was alive. She was recovering from alcoholism, and she did a beautiful job of it. She recovered from alcoholism for the last 13 years of her life, had her 13th birthday in AA just before she died. I was so proud.
Wow.
And one of the things that she regained with sobriety was the desire to lead a more spiritually oriented life. And yet she said she didn't know how to pray. And she said, there's nobody there, Carla. There's just nobody there. And I thought for a minute, and I realized what I needed to do, and I said, well, Mom, you know, your bedroom, you've got a bed that has bedposts. I said, I want you to talk to your bedpost. Well, a couple of weeks later, she came to me, and she said, Carla, she said, the bedpost is listening. The bedpost is talking to me. I said, that's right. I said, you have to make room for it. You just have to make room for it to be true. And when you are willing to believe that it's true, then you can feel that it's true. So it's like clapping for Tinkerbell. Maybe you don't believe 100% in Tinkerbell, but you clap for Tinkerbell because you want to believe. And that gives spirit the opportunity to be strong enough to let itself be known to you. And that's really all it took. And she was prayer-oriented the rest of her life and depended on it completely. So, I mean, it's tried and true. It works tremendously well. And you really don't have to say, Dear Holy Spirit or Dear Angels or whatever. You just have to say, Dear Helpful Unseen Spirits, help. And then, you know, start a conversation. And especially if you will wait after you're part of the conversation and be aware of any impressions that might come, you will get impressions, and those impressions will be those that tend towards being helpful. I even encouraged Mom to keep a prayer journal, which she did, and it was very inspiring. I encourage a lot of people to do that because I think that people are interested in opening up to spirit, and they don't realize that the way to do it is very intimate. It's part of you. It's talking to a part of yourself that is beyond space-time. It's in time-space. It's in the metaphysical realm. And when you sit there, just as Walsh did in his conversations with God, and you write a question out on your piece of paper, and you sit there with a pencil in your hand, and you wait for an impression, you're going to get an impression. And if you just simply write it down, then, you know, you started a conversation with the unknown entity that wants to help you. And as I said, I don't believe it's necessary to them that you identify them as this or that. As a matter of fact, most of the entities that are in spirit don't really have names. And one of the things that they have to do in talking to humans is pick a name so that the human will feel comfortable. And a lot of the names that you get, consequently, are made up. But they're made up to vibrate at a certain energy that is compatible with your spiritual energy.
I remember a while back, one of my friends who had come from fundamentalist Christianity and had gotten into more of a, you know, new age kind of spirituality, metaphysical spirituality, had confided in me that he didn't really believe in prayer anymore because he was kind of past that, he thought. But he was very apologetic that whenever he really had a major crisis in his life, he would resort back to prayer. And the way he explained it to me, he was embarrassed. And I told him, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. I said, look, you know, it's prayer. Prayer is prayer. And whether, you know, if you're still, I should say still, but if that's what is comfortable to you, you know, I was thinking that maybe he didn't need to feel so embarrassed about it and apologetic. So what do you think about that? I mean, have you seen that happen with people when they get more into metaphysical spirituality that they leave behind the prayer? And is that necessarily something that they may want to revisit or get back
to
in some way?
That really what people need to do is when they are ready to take hold of their own spiritual life, what they need to do is just let go of the strictures of the old organized religion. Let go of the dogma, let go of the language, let go of everything except that which powered it being that great desire to know the Creator, that great desire to serve, that great desire to appreciate and worship and be in relationship with the Creator. And I think that prayer is an extremely valid and not a particularly Christian concept. It is a sacred conversation, and it is when you cast yourself as one who is able to speak with the forces of creation and be heard and be talked to, be responded to. So there's no need to give up the concept of prayer simply because you let go of a type of Christianity which one might call fundamentalism or conservative Christianity. The problem with dogmatic Christianity, just as the problem is with dogmatic Buddhism or dogmatic Muslim studies or any world religion that is dogmatic, is that religion refuses to stay within bounds. And one's mystical experiences always exceed the box, the neat little boxes of I believe in, you know, fill in the blank. And if you want to have a simple black and white belief system, you have to give up your intellect, your ability to analyze and think. You basically have to give up having an IQ, and you have to simply say, well, I'm taking these things on faith because that's what I'm supposed to do. And in exchange for that, I get an absolute guarantee that I'm doing the right thing at all times, and I will definitely get into heaven. And We'll feel sorry for all those poor people who just can't come up to snuff and do things the way the religion tells you to do them. Well, you get rid of that. You finally break yourself free of that, and you think that you also need to be free of some of the things that were wonderful about the religion, the worship, the prayer, the singing, the praise, the thanksgiving, all of the emotional states that transport one beyond the here and now to a space that is far lifted above this sometimes difficult experience of Earth. You don't have to give up everything when you turn away from the strictures of a dogmatic religion. You simply need to let go of all of those shoulds. You know, you should not, and then fill in the blank, you should not dance, you should not, what are some of the things that you should not do? You should not drink, you should not play cards. I was brought up as an Episcopalian, so, you know, we row the boat ashore, we row the boat right up into the woods, but we do it while we're drinking. You know, it's there's not any guilt. There's no dogmatism to be noticed in Episcopalian type belief. It's that wonderful area in between the Roman Catholic, we are the church, and you're guilty as anything, and you're going to have to beg your way into heaven, that kind of, you know, guilt. And on the other side of it, the Protestant charismatic judgment that is so harsh and judges everyone else to be completely unacceptable except the people that believe just exactly as you do. Both of those extremes can hurt people badly. And for all I know, Episcopalians have been hurt badly by being brought up in a certain church, although I certainly wasn't. But when you come into your own and realize, I want to be in charge of my own spiritual life, then you get to pick what works for you. You know what moves you beyond the everyday. You know how you like to worship. You know whether or not you find any use whatsoever in the Bible, or in the things that you're supposed to believe in the dogma of the Bible. And you are in charge of saying, I accept that, or I don't accept that. And prayer is just one of the many things that is very helpful for a whole lot of people. It's a resource, not just for Christianity, but for people in all world religions and people without any religion at all. Just about every person prays involuntarily when something absolutely amazing happens. It's that, oh my God. Well, to whom are you speaking if not God? You know, you're praying. You're reaching out to the divine, and you're hoping for some help. So the essence of prayer is built into our bones. We are as religious a people as it's as much a part of our DNA as wanting to be of service to others or wanting to have a family or any of those things. It's part of who we are. So I don't think that anybody needs to identify prayer as Christian. Just try it. If it helps you, then let it be part of your resources, things that you turn to when you need to work on spiritual questions.
So don't throw the baby out with the bathwater then. All right. Everyone, I just want to let our callers know we've got some live callers, and if you would like to just listen, that's fine, but if you would like to be on the air and ask a question live, then be sure and hit the one key so I will know to unmute you. All right. And anyone who would like to call in with a question, you can do so by calling 646-595-2294. That's 646-595-2294. And be sure and hit the one key if you would like to be joining the show live with a question. Okay, we have a question from Oceania and from the forum, from the Bring Forth forum. That's bring4th.org, bringforth.org, by the way. We have a wonderful community there if you'd like to visit us there. Oceania says, is there anything Carla can say about mental disorders and autism or Asperger's that goes more into why, how, and what the purpose of such is? Why do some get mental stuff instead of physical stuff? And how are people supposed to balance their chakras and all that when they have actual brain differences, such as overactive brains, serotonin in the stomach, and weaker lower chakras? Do you need to seek help in order to change that, or are you supposed to change that? And do vaccines cause it? Also, mental stuff is hard to fix. When you live in your brain, you can't be separate from it. Mentally ill people get a lot of crap for being irrational and unreasonable. But if the brain is diseased and you reason with your brain, how are you supposed to overcome it? It's incredibly hard. I can't even meditate properly because the brain starts filling your mind with all kinds of nonsense, and it gets scary. I don't understand. I hate mental illness. Is there any way to rewrite your catalyst? Thank you.
Okay. There is a way to rewrite your catalyst, and that's just by chewing through it. It's in how you respond to your catalyst that you rewrite it. In the first place, I cannot speak to specific things like why is there a certain type of mental illness? Why is there Asperger's? Why is there this or that? I don't think vaccines cause it, but what do I know? I haven't made a study of vaccines and their effect on the mentality of people. And I'm not sure how many years I'd have to go to college to be able to be qualified to do that. But I think that what we have is a very delicate and sensitive electrical body that responds to an unknown amount of catalyst, depending on who you are. There are some people who react powerfully, for instance, to words, to what people think. There are others who really could care less about what people think and have trouble even understanding why they should care what people think. People are very various, and you can't make generalities about catalyst. What happens to you is unique to you. So the question becomes, how can I step into this process of responding to catalyst? And I think the first thing that you need to do is to see yourself as a person of power. The catalyst is not overwhelming to a person of power. The catalyst is a catalyst. There it is. You know, the bull is racing across the meadow. And obviously you're going to run for the fence. So run for the fence. That's okay. You're not obligated to love the bull and therefore stand there and try to tame the bull. You're going to put the fence in between you and the bull. You need to protect yourself the way you need to do that. However, you have to realize, in order to be able to work with the catalyst, that your responses are not necessarily dyed in the wool. You have the ability to hone in on your knee-jerk response. You have the ability to change that. So, for instance, if you're incredibly sensitive about somebody talking to you about your weight, and somebody again says to you, boy, you look fat in that dress, you know, there's a chance for you to work with your catalyst. There's a chance for you to think, okay, that just pushed one of my buttons. That really hurt. Now, I'm looking at a person who's trying to hurt me for no good reason. I wonder why that person wants to hurt me. What's going on with that person? And if you can get some spaciousness around that moment, instead of reacting to that nasty comment, you say to yourself, something is causing that person pain, or that person wouldn't be striking out. And so you say instead something like, what's wrong? Is there something I can help with? You've completely ignored defending yourself from being fat. I mean, who cares what that person thinks of you anyway? And who cares if you are fat? Maybe you like being fat. Maybe you don't like being fat, but maybe you can't help it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You could go on forever. But the point of it is, it doesn't matter. The point of it is, in any interaction with another human being, what you're trying to do is get to a point where you are in control of your response so that you can act in a loving way instead of in an unloving way. You can love that person as a soul and realize that that person is in pain. And instead of reacting to the pain of the comment, you realize, I'm looking in a mirror, that person is hurting, and how can I respond to that person in such a way as to let them know that I realize that they are hurting and that I would like to be a person that's helpful to them. It completely changes the vibrations of a situation if you're able to do that. Now, most things aren't that cut and dried, and most things aren't that obvious, obviously. But every time that you get activated, every time that the catalyst seems inevitable, let there be some moments pass. Hold your tongue. Let spaciousness surround you. Ask for that help. See the person that gave you the catalyst as a soul in pain. And relate to that soul in pain. Just put yourself aside for the minute. You can deal with your own hurt later. And let this be about supporting and loving that person. That is the way that you slowly begin to change the habits of a lifetime. You step in and change your own reactions so that they are more in accordance with what you really believe to be true about yourself and about all of us being one and about all of us being here to help each other. You create that environment by the way you react to people who may indeed be very unkind to you. I do not speak of these things without having the guts to do this myself. There are many times that I receive, whether carelessly or, you know, thoughtlessly or on purpose, I don't know, something that really hurts my feelings a lot. And I really do have that choice. Okay, do I defend or do I reduce that need to defend and enlarge my need to support that other person? And then you might say, well, that person doesn't deserve it. But we all deserve it. And I think we especially deserve it when we're misbehaving because that's when we're the most in pain. Now, mental illness is in everyone's subjective definition. There are objective mental illnesses. There are ways that you can be out of sync with consensus reality that follow along with someone's definition of a mental illness. You can see where some people are schizophrenic. They move, you know, without being able to help it, they move from one to another personality. And you can see sometimes that someone is paranoid on a certain subject. So when you have trouble functioning and people are calling you mentally ill, they could be all wet. They could be quite wrong. You could be so sensitive to your environment that things appear obvious to you that don't even appear at all to other people. That doesn't mean they're not real to you. That doesn't mean that you're crazy. That means that you're seeing things that other people can't see. Now, I've had a bit of this in my life. Not as much as you, perhaps, but I have definitely perceived energies that other people did not. I have perceived intentions and feelings in people that they would deny, on and on. And it's because I'm sensitive to energy, and other people are not particularly, and they're not trained to be sensitive to energy. So if you're having trouble functioning and people are telling you you're crazy, then what you need to tell yourself is that they don't know and could never know whether you're crazy. They might be able to throw some words around. They might be able to find it necessary to try to help you. And I say, you know, if your parents, for instance, or your loved ones want you to have therapy, for instance, because they think that you need help, there's really nothing wrong with therapy if you can find a therapist that will actually listen to you. And there are lots of therapists that do. See if you can find a therapist that is sympathetic to someone who is sensitive, and try not to be defensive about things that you perceive that other people do not. If they say, well, you seem to have trouble functioning, say, well, you know, I really do. I do have trouble functioning. And, you know, I'd like to function better, but here are the things that get in my way. And, you know, see what you can do to talk with the therapist and see if she can help. A lot of times they can help. I think there are times when you really do need to talk to somebody. Not knowing you, sweetheart, I don't know whether it's one of those situations where people just don't know what your situation is, and they're calling you crazy, but in actuality, you don't have any more mental illness than I do. Or whether there might be a few pains in your life that have gotten so bad that they've gotten beyond you, and that you might need help in working through how to handle those particular subjects or those particular areas of your life. I don't know. I do know that it's okay to ask for help. It's even okay to accept medication, given that it actually is helping you. It's not okay for people to shove it on you when you don't feel that it's helping. I think you deserve to be in charge of things like that. But what I would suggest is that in the end, I think, as they say these days, at the end of the day, you know deep within yourself that there's a core of you that's sane, that is true, that is worthy, that is right for you. You may be unique, and you may be unique in ways that people can't understand, but that doesn't make you wrong. That doesn't make you crazy. See if you can find people in your life that will acknowledge your worthiness, your rightness, that will support you and give you that support that you need in order to be able to begin to function better.
Okay. Okay, we're going to move on to our next question from, well, no, actually, we have another question from Oceania. Am I saying that right? Oceania? She had a part two to that. She asked about the mover moved question. I want to know if mover moved is first density, such as cells and molecules.
Well, I don't think so. I think that people got this mover moved thing because they were trying to find an ultimate cause of everything. It's a way of playing with words. It's an intellectual form of play. And in terms of spiritual seeking, it tends to be useless. It tends to be sophomoric. In other words, sophomoric is a couple of Greek words that mean wise fool. It tends to be a bunch of people talking about things that sound very erudite and elegant, but are actually nothing but wind. And in a world in which all is one, you are part of the mover. And all things are part of the mover. There is also an endless ripple effect, which means that everything that you do affects others, endlessly. Everything that another person does will affect you. We are dancing together, so we are both mover and moved. We are one. And that statement, we are one, forces the intellectual player into a paradox. How can I be both the mover and the moved? You know, how can this be? How can both be true? Well, both are true. And that's the paradox. And you know when you run into paradox that you've run into good stuff. Spiritual seeking is the land of paradox, mystery, and conundrum. And when you've run into a good mystery, you've definitely run into spiritual things. So instead of trying to solve the mystery, see yourself as the mystery. And allow that mystery to explain itself to you each day as you go through your life and you see what you think and you see how things go. And you learn more and more. And I think the more that you're paying attention to each thought that you have and the more thoughtful that you are about observing yourself and observing life as it passes you by, the more you're going to start seeing spiritual coincidences that let you know that spirit and you are indeed dancing, and it is a dance of unity.
There's a quote from Session 78 from Ra, says there was polarity in the sense of the mover and the moved. I just did a search on those words just out of curiosity because I remember them being used in the Law of One. Mm-hmm. And Ra goes on to say there was no polarity in the sense of service to self and service to others in that context and in how Ra's using these words. Could you define what they mean by mover and moved?
Let me look that up. When did you say that was? In session what?
78.13. I can read you the question if that will help. I'll just go ahead and read it. It's a short one.
What's 78. It's session 78.
Yeah, point 13.
Okay, go ahead and read it.
Okay. Then we have at the beginning of this galactic evolution an archetypal mind that is the product of the previous octave, which this galaxy then used as and acts upon under the first distortion, so as to allow for what we experience as polarity. Was there any concept of polarity carried through from the previous octave in the sense of service to others or service to self, polarity? Ra, I am Ra. There was polarity in the sense of the mover and the moved. There was no polarity in the sense of service to self and service to others.
Okay, do you know what question that was? Do you have the numbers thing on in your...
Yeah, 78.13.
Mm-hmm.
I just went ahead and said
we're talking about the mind, body, and spirit, or the night of primeval darkness. Okay. They're talking about the archetypal mind here. So when they talk about the beginning of this polarity, they say there was polarity in the sense of the mover and the moved. I suppose that means there's polarity in the sense of that which we started out with in this density. We started out with the sub-logos that chose the ways of the density and so forth. So in that case, the sub-logos would be that which had designed the basic geography within which we had gained our experience. But no polarity in the sense of anything like a service to self or service to others polarity, but just in the sense of that the responsibility for the design, shall we say, of this octave is the responsibility of the sub-logos, the sun that we were born under and that we've experienced these densities under. But that goes way, way back. The mover and the move goes way back to the beginnings of creation, you know, when timelessness dissolved into time and the scroll of time started to unroll. So by the time you get to an actual human being, the mover and the moved has become part of the structure of the origins of our experience, but not part of the structure of our gaining of experience, our catalyst in our experience, because in that sense, we are the ones who choose the polarity of by our choices, and the choices are many. So I think that the thing to cling to is I'd go back to Ra session one, and it's in the very beginning here. He says that which is infinite cannot be many. So if we are infinite beings, we are both mover and moved. That's where I'm coming from. That goes on in session one to say, to have infinity, you must identify or define that infinity as unity. Otherwise, the term does not have any reference or meaning. In an infinite creator, there is only unity. And then they talk about seeing a simple example of unity in the prism, which shows all colors stemming from the sunlight. I do think that... when you have thoughts becoming things at the end of third density, as I've talked about earlier in this hour, you are dealing, when you're a very sensitive person, with much more of a reality than people realize, because they don't think that thoughts are things. You know, this particular illusion of third density downplays the power of thought and at this point in our experience, we really can't do that. So I think for anybody that's sensitive and that people might say, well, she's a little bit, you know, maybe she's a little bit mental, maybe she's a little bit odd, fae or whatever, they have to deal with so much more than the unsensitive person has to deal with. I give Oceania great credit for hanging in there and working with a very complicated reality because of the fact that he or she sees so far into the unseen realms and sees that thoughts are indeed things and is powerfully affected by things that don't affect other people.
Do you think those terms have anything to do with the catalyst itself? In other words, does the mover have anything to do with the catalyst that we are being subjected to being, you know, while we're here in 3D. In other words, maybe that I'm totally way off here, but that was something that I, whenever I read those words, I always thought of the person that's experiencing the catalyst and then the mover being the one that's creating or offering the catalyst. Is that totally way off?
No, I don't think it's off at all. I think, but the point is that you can be the one that creates the catalyst the way you want to. So you become the mover. So I think when you take power back to yourself as a spiritual being, you regain the power to choose how you want to be, how you want to respond. And the truer you are to exactly how you want to be and how you want to respond to people and situations, then the stronger you are spiritually. So, you know, before, as I said at the beginning of this question, before responding to anything, take that moment, let spaciousness build around what's happened that you want to respond to, and choose, consciously choose, the most loving, the highest, the best way you can possibly respond. It's really hard because the first thing that you want to do is defend yourself. But you don't have to defend yourself. And the more that you don't defend yourself, the more that you're all about the other person and being concerned about the other person, the more you realize how strong you are and how you don't need to defend yourself, that you're perfectly fine without defending yourself, that you believe in yourself. If another person doesn't, well, that's too bad. And I think that probably makes you more able to withstand other people's bad opinions of how sane you are. All my life, I've seen people make terrible judgments, mean, petty, cruel judgments about others that are different than they are. And I've known people of various sensitivities in various different ways. And I suppose I'm very empathetic by nature, so I can see, even in someone who admittedly has got some problems with dealing with reality, that according to the way that person is seeing things, she or he is doing a fantastic job of wending his or her way through all of the things that he or she is seeing, which the regular person doesn't even see. You know, I know people that talk to and see entities that other people don't even know are there. Now, are you going to say that that person is crazy because it's aware of a voice that you're not aware of? Or are you going to call yourself crazy because you're so insensitive that you don't know that there's an entity there? You know, cats and dogs respond to unseen presences, and that's well known, and nobody thinks anything of it. But what if a person can see an unseen presence? What if a person can see a ghost? Then people will say, well, she's crazy. She sees ghosts. Well, sorry, she's not crazy. She's seeing more than most people see, that's all. So I tend to be very, I tend to come to the defense of people like Oceania and say, now wait a minute, according to the way this person perceives, this person is perceiving perfectly well. And if you don't think that that's functioning well, well, you ought to try dealing with what she's dealing with.
Oh, that is it right there. I was just going to say, it seems to me that the bigger catalyst is in dealing with the stigma of having a mental disorder and then people trying to fix the person and give them drugs, give them medication. Now, I'm not saying that might not be appropriate. Obviously, in some cases, I'm sure it is very appropriate in order to function in society. But so this is not intended as any judgment on any medications or anything or any treatment or anything like that. But it I'm just saying in some cases it may be that the treatment might be worse than the situation if they really are just picking up on other entities or that sort of thing. If we could understand what's going on, that it's not necessarily, you know, an illness, but it is actually, they really, you know, in some cases may actually be picking up on something very real.
That's
I mean, is that, yeah. So
absolutely right. And I've had people tell me, you know, look, I know the medicine will keep me from seeing these things, but I want to deal with reality as I see it. I don't want to blind myself just in order to make people comfortable with me. And of course not. Of course you don't want to ask the person to do that.
And it must be really overwhelming for the person to be picking up on, you know, perceiving things that in addition to this reality. I mean, that must be very confusing.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when they don't understand what's going on.
That's
and
right.
I imagine there's negative entities that take advantage of that openness. And you know, we've all heard the stories of the people that went out and did horrible things because the dog told them to do it. I mean, obviously, you know, that's not a good thing.
No, but it is possible to say to someone who is receiving information that is obviously negative, and that person says, look, I know this isn't positive, this isn't the way I feel, but this is what I'm hearing. And I just look at that person and say, look, tell that entity that you're not going to listen, that you're a positively oriented person, that you're service to others oriented, and you're not going to listen to that. And just ignore them. Because you don't have to listen. You don't have to listen. You don't have to answer the phone. And this person was in the position of having to answer the phone, not being able to hang up the phone. I said, okay, if you can't hang up the phone, if it's a party line, just don't listen to it. Just blah, na, 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 you know. put your fingers in your ears and go la, la, la. but you know, simply refuse it. It worked for her. It did work for her. She got to the point where the entity left her alone because it wasn't getting anywhere. She just said, nope, don't buy it, won't do it. And, you know, she got the strength to do that because there was somebody on her side saying, you're not crazy, you're receiving this, but that's a nasty, petty, mean, rotten individual. And I don't care if you can't see it, it doesn't mean that they're right. You know it's right. So, you know, it works. But it doesn't mean that person is going to have a comfortable life. Some of us come in with great sensitivity because we can hold the light in ways that other people cannot. And we hold that light, and we came in to do that, and that's what we're here to do. And maybe we suffer. That's okay. We came here to do that, and we came here to serve, and we're doing that. And, you know, whatever our path, we do the very highest and best that we can to serve. And I say more power to Oceania, and just stay on the light side, stay on the loving side, and she'll be just fine.
Okay, we are actually out of time, but I know you put a little disclaimer at the beginning of this answer, and I'm going to add another one just in case there's any confusion. Neither Carla nor I are in any way making any sort of recommendation for any person regarding any sort of treatments or medication or whatever they may feel is appropriate in their case or what their healthcare practitioner may be advising them to do. We are not in any way telling them to not do that, okay? Just thought I'd better throw that out there. So certainly proceed with whatever is appropriate in your particular situation. We're not offering any advice in that area.
Right, but we do give you a great big hug and say best and best.
Absolutely. Okay, we are absolutely out of time, and I want to let everyone know that we have a website, llresearch.org, which is our archive website, home to the channeling transcripts that you've heard us refer to tonight, publications, the entire Law of One material, which you can read online, or you can get the books if you prefer hard copy. We've got interview speeches and much more. And bringforth.org, bring4th.org, which is our community website featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. Thank you so much for listening in, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions. You can submit a question at bringforth.org. In the miscellaneous section, look for the thread Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert submitting questions, or you can email me at magicalmoons@gmail.com. Magic with a K, magicalmoons@gmail.com. Have a wonderful week. We will be here next Friday, March 9th at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. And until then, have a great week.